Now it is my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Let's offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Domingo.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Domingo, and I'm an alcoholic, among other things. Wow, 8 years today. Today has been one of those days where I'm like in La La Land, and I can't believe it. You know, I'm here, and I miss you guys. I haven't been going to as many meetings because of my work. And before I forget, my mother, my aunt, my sister-in-law are here, so that changes everything. Just so you guys know, that changes everything. If you don't normally see me choke up, or you're going to see me really probably choke up today. Another thing is I wish they would turn on the air conditioner. Before I get going, I know by heart, but right now I'm a little nervous. That's another thing I want to let you guys know. I'm a little nervous. And my friend Grasso told me it was something else. I think he said it was anticipatory anxiety or something like that. Anyways, which I think translates to excited. Anyways, this is one of my favorite quotes. And it goes something like this. When you come out of the storm, you won't be the same person that walked in. That's what the storm is all about. So let me tell you about my storm. You know, like most of us, when I was little, I never wanted to be an alcoholic. I never wanted to use drugs. I never wanted to go to jail. You know, those are not the things that I aspired for when I was a little guy, you know. At one time, I thought about being a dentist. I thought about being a father someday and raise a family. And a lot of the things that a lot of us, you know, dreamed of when we were little, you know, I thought that way. And never in my wildest imagination did I think I would, I would end up doing those things. But I'm no longer ashamed of those things, you know. A good friend of mine this year that came back around here a little bit over a year ago, I was telling him I was nervous about this because I've always kind of avoided the whole Valley Group Ice House thing, you know. And when Bill hit me with it this time, and especially because it landed on a Wednesday, I didn't even hesitate. And I said, yeah, sure, you know, I chaired a couple of meetings before. And then when he told me he was going to be here, because he just the other day told me he was going to be here, and I said, that's good because that's kind of my bell tower. That's my sanctuary. I love this place, you know. A lot of people sometimes get to where they think they're too good for this place. This place has helped a lot of people, you know. And there's been some people that were really, really defensive of this place, and they contributed a lot to this place. And some of them are no longer with us. But, you know, I'm grateful for people like that, like David Looper and so many others that looked after this place. You know, they never got too good for it. And I heard that right now this place is in a little bit of trouble. So, you know, if you guys can maybe consider a membership or whatever it takes to keep the doors open for people like me coming in for the first time, you know. Okay. This was my first time. This is my first time. 2,920 days, you know. And so like I was telling you, going back to that friend of mine that told me, don't be nervous, man. Just focus on what you do best. And what you do best is you show about gratitude, you talk about gratitude, and you talk about hope. And that's really what this is all about. It's about giving people hope, conveying a message of hope. And that's what I'm here for, because so many of you guys have done it for me before. So many of you guys did it for me. You know, I could go down the list. So many of you guys have been my Eskimo, you know, that got me out of the blizzard. And I've said this to Oli before, because he sat outside with me when I was in a funk, you know. And the Charlie Munsons and the David Loopers and so many other people that have helped me. And I'm hoping that tonight I can help someone new here the way they helped me so that I stayed. You know, I came in here with the promise that if I had the desire to stop drinking and using, I would do that. I would achieve that by following just some simple instructions, you know. And I've always thought myself as a person that can follow instructions if I really had the desire to do it. And I really have the desire to do it. The most important thing for you to really change your life around is having the willingness. And I want to talk about willingness. Before I ever set foot in a meeting, I found myself having the willingness. But what took for me to get there is a lot of desperation and a lot of pain and a lot of grief and putting my family through hell, you know. I knew I had the desire to stop that last time that I was arrested. No other time before, and I had been arrested many, many times. But that time I was desperate enough, I had been beaten to submission. And it was just God pretty much stepping in and saying, you know what, that's it, man. And, you know, I can tell you that if you really want to change your life around, man, do what so many others have done here. Do what I've done, do what so many others have done. You know, I don't want to really get a whole lot into the drunker log. I'm kind of glad it's not really a 45-minute deal. I don't have to speak for 45 minutes. There's another meeting here at 8 o'clock, and so I have to cut it a little bit short. But it's just right for me to tell my story, you know. First experience with alcohol, I was about 8 years old. And I had an uncle that used to make this cocktail, and he used fruit. Sometimes pineapple, sometimes mangoes. And he would use this very strong alcohol. It was called sugarcane alcohol. It said, do not drink on the bottle. Not for human consumption. And he served me up. I'm not going to give up his name because his sister's here, and that's irrelevant. But he served me a tumbler of this stuff. I don't know how strong it was. It was just extremely strong, probably stronger than 151 or any of that. It's like moonshine. And I remember he poured some over the fruit, and then he poured some sugar, and I thought, for a kid, that looked really good. Then he lit a match to it, so it'd get a little kind of a toasty flavor. And then to replenish the alcohol that burned in that beautiful blue flame, he put some more alcohol to replace the one he used to kind of cook it up. Then he put some cold water and just mixed it up and put it in a cup and gave it to me. And let me tell you that was quite an experience that I couldn't wait to do again. You know, I could not wait to do that again. I had found this elixir that made me feel just amazing. And it's just weird, you know. That's, I didn't know it back then, but that's the addictive personality, you know. And it's crazy because not everyone in my family suffers from this. My mother, she has no problems with alcohol or anything. Neither does my father. You know, I have some uncles that have had issues with alcohol, but... You know, I was brought up in a family where it wasn't really a thing. You know, I didn't have alcoholics or dope fiends in my family, but I ended up with this gene and with this disease. And now I embrace what has transpired, as you know, from me having that. You know, so I was 8 years old. My parents were separated. Then they got back together, and we ended up here in Visalia after they got back together. And so I wanted to be a really good kid, so I didn't mess around with anything. You know, I did good in school, and I thought I behaved pretty good, and I didn't want to be no part of my parents separating again. So I think most of us kids, you know, we want our parents together, so it's good to, you know, contribute towards that, towards a family unit, you know. And I did real good, fell in love at a young age, got married. I was 20 years old. And I'm kind of fast-forwarding because there was no issues really with my disease then as a teenager or anything like that. It was crazy because I got married to a really religious woman, and, you know, I started going to church, and that kept me, you know, on the straight and narrow, I guess. It kept my disease kind of in check. But for some weird reason, in my 30s, the beast came out, and I already had 3 little boys, you know. And, you know, it's just the way it is. It's my story, you know. We all have our story. And it just went, it was crazy because it started right around 2000, and it just went like crazy. Like, within, I was kind of using and drinking in the closet and kind of keeping it from her. I would work out of town a lot. And within 2 years, she was gone. The kids were gone, and I stayed in the house we were in, and I would rent the rooms to people just so that I can have money for alcohol and drugs. And we were in the house pretty much until we were run off by the cops. We got raided so many times that I didn't come around no more. I left everything there because, you know, I was running from the law. So then I just pretty much just became this criminal. I was drunk. I was loaded. I was no self-respect, no dignity, no love for myself. And I stayed away from my family, which is, you know, sad. I can't believe it. I look back now and I'm like, I can't believe that was me. You know, it's like a whole other person doing that. I stayed away holidays. And if I came around them, it was usually just to take from them. not to contribute in any positive way. You know, and I lived that way for about 7 years. And this is where the storm really, well, the storm started already, but this is where, this is kind of like the eye of the storm. And in the fall of 2007, I was so sick and tired and so demoralized from what I had done with my life, and the guilt and shame had gotten to me so much that in the fall of 2007, I tried to end my own life. And obviously it didn't work, you know.
Thank
God. God wasn't ready for me yet. I can tell you that I woke up in a hospital in Fresno with my mouth wired shut. My family had no idea where I was at. And a doctor standing over me with a bullet in a little baggie. And he didn't know my name, so he called me Lucky. They had me there under just John Doe, Lucky, whatever. I had no ID on me or anything. The doctor gave me the name of Lucky. And then they started asking me a series of questions when I came to after, I guess, I don't know how many hours of surgery to remove this thing. Because I went in, I must not like things in my mouth, especially cold metal figures. So I went like this, and it ended up lodged right here. I don't know how long it took him to get it out, but he was rubbing on my head and calling me Lucky. They had shaved my head and a few other areas, and they had hoses and weird stuff all over me, you know, and they had me hooked up to all this stuff. And when I came to, he started asking me a series of questions. He started asking me my name, and I remember my name. He started asking me other things like, is there someone we could call? And I said, yes, you can call my mother. And I gave him the phone number. And my mother and my cousin, Carmen, came and got me. And you think that that would put an end to my storm or my insanity. You think that I would throw in the towel and seek help. But I didn't. I went on for another year. This is in the fall of 2007. And the fall of 2008 is when I got sick and tired. And that's pretty much, that's all I can tell you as far as my drunkalogue. I'm like most of you are. Once I start, I can't stop. And that means alcohol. That means any mind-altering thing. I was a complete and dedicated slave to that stuff. And that's really what it is. I was a slave to it. And so, you know, that's what happened, what it was like. It took me there, you know. And I know in this room alone, if I was to ask by a show of hands, how many of you guys have thought, and you don't have to raise your hand, but I know that the number will be scary, have thought of doing what I did. That was my best solution to my problems and to my ending my suffering. That was my escape. That's what I thought would fix everything. Not even thinking for a second what it would put my family through, and what them put them through anyways, you know. And, you know, gratitude is my favorite topic. If I ever chair a meeting, that's my topic. And I always say this, I say, I'm grateful that I'm alive. I'm grateful that I can walk in here on my own 2 feet. I'm grateful that I can breathe on my own. I'm grateful that I can chew my own food. And I'm grateful, just eternally grateful that I have been given a life far beyond my wildest dreams. I can tell you that I have lived more and loved more, and probably, well, I'm not going to say that I have been loved more, because I know I've always been loved. I just wasn't always aware of it. More in the last 8 years than I did in the 40 years prior to that. I feel like I have really lived this last 8 years. And I mean, don't get me wrong, I still hit my bumps on the road. And I still have problems, but it's how I deal with them now that makes all the difference. And I think there's a member in the program that says he's never seen a grateful person or a grateful alcoholic get drunk. I think it might be Aloha Ken. Gratitude, I think gratitude and hope go hand in hand. If you remain grateful, you'll never really lose hope. And you can also kind of convey that feeling towards other people. It just kind of comes like Ken, man. It just like comes out of every pore. He's always smiling. It amazes me. He always shows up early to the meetings. I'm extremely tired. I don't want to make excuses. I'm just telling my story. I didn't write it down anywhere. This is my story. This is like my thumbprint, my blueprint, my DNA. My hope is that it really helps at least one person go out of here with a whole different perspective on things. If I can do it, anybody can do it. I was one less likely to ever quit. I was one voted probably that I would die out there. And I made it, and a couple of my friends follow. And one of them is Robert. I don't know if you guys know Robert P. He was he used to be in service in this meeting a couple of years ago. And he followed me 6 months after me. And that's amazing that you can have that effect on people, you know, even on just one person. You know, in this program, I've grown up a lot. In this program, I've learned about honesty. I learned about humility, true humility. I learned about unconditional love. I've learned about giving. I learned a lot, man. I really have. I learned the importance of living by the principles of this program. It's important that if you're new here, it's important that you get started and you learn what is taught here. And guess what? Good news is for free. All you got to do is ask. And someone will guide you. Someone will take you by the hand. And when you hear their story, you will be blown away. When you pick a sponsor and he tells you his story, you will be blown away. You know, material things come and go. I believe that what you have material-wise doesn't make you who you are. They're nice to have, you know, nice to have comforts. You know, I've been without. You know, Anita talks about, if you don't mind me saying, talks about coming in here without shoes. And she's an amazing, successful woman. And I love her and I trust her. And I would actually ask Anita to help me with any problem. She's one of those that, you know, I have dear in my heart. And so many of you, man. Anthony and Michelle sitting back there. I love my life today, man. I really do, man. Get into it. Don't procrastinate. I know there's a lot of new people here. You need to hear this. There's nothing for you out there. The alternative is across the street. You guys know what's across the street?
Cemetery.
It's the Visalia Cemetery. It really is, man. We have lost a lot of good people because I don't know why, but they leave before the miracle happens. They're afraid to sit in the front row. When I first came in, I was back there like in the second row. You know, I was a little intimidated, but I was desperate and I started moving forward. And I was right there where Patrick is at 6 months and 23 days. And that's crazy how you don't forget things like that. And this kid, he's younger than me, Joey, was talking about this meeting that was struggling and they needed a new secretary. And me, you know, being new and naive and curious, I go, so what does it take to be up there? What's involved? And then he asked me, so how much time do you have? I go, 6 months and 23 days. And then he says, hey, all in favor of getting Domingo to secretary this meeting? Raise your hand. Any opposed? And let me tell you, man, being of service saved my life. I was on probation. I had a card that needed to be signed. I had to call in every day to see if I needed to pee in a... I don't know if you guys... Are you guys familiar with that? Peeing in a little Tupperware thing like this? I did that for a month shy of 3 years. And I know you're not... I mean, supposedly the... not supposedly, but fact is that you can secretary a meeting and there's a term kind of limit. So, but I think God wanted me to do that Monday night, 8 o'clock meeting for, you know, about 29 months or so. So I had 6 months and I stopped doing it at almost 3 years. Anyways, And it saved my life. It kept me accountable. I loved it, man. I got all the help I needed from people, you know. Sometimes I would have an issue and I would pick that as a topic, and you'd be surprised how much feedback I get from all these people coming up here. And you know, I had people like Mandy, I had people like JC, and so many others come and secretary, and it was awesome. So don't be afraid to move up to the front rows, man. Seriously, it makes a difference. Man, I'm almost running out of story, and the clock is still. you know, like I said, I've learned so much here, man. My current sponsor's in the hospital right now. I really don't know what's going on with him. I'm gonna go see him, find out what's going on. You know, I worry about him. My first sponsor, Jimmy Andrews, he couldn't make it today, but he helped me out so much, man. I got into it with him within the first. He was celebrating 5 years at the alumni, at the Pine alumni. And he was just so excited. He said, I don't know if some of you guys know, but he's just so excited and so energized. I said, I'm going to hit up that guy to be my sponsor. So after he received his 5-year coin or a medallion, I rushed through the crowd and I hit him up. And he helped me out so much. And sometimes we would meet outside the ice house on Wednesdays and discuss my work. And I saw him the other day, and I mean, there's some things that I kind of had forgotten because I was new and, you know, excited. And he told me, man, you really had a hard time, man. He said, you really had a hard time letting go of some things. You were really beating yourself up with that stick. And, you know, he's right. The hardest person to forgive is yourself. I had no problem asking people for forgiveness. I had no problem forgiving a lot of people. I mean, I was the one that did most of the wrongdoing. I was the one that really needed to go out around and ask for forgiveness. But I had a hard time forgiving myself for a lot of what I did, especially with my children. And he brought that up. You know, we met here at the Atlanta Club a while back, a couple months ago, and we talked about that. And anyways, if you're new here and you're hurting, welcome. There really is hope here. Your life can change. I came here desperate, hurting. Oh, I was going to talk about looking in the mirror. I was going to talk about that. It's important that I talk about that. You know, on my way to work this morning, I was thinking about what I should say so that I can really deliver a message that would help someone. And man, if you could hear what I thought in the car, you would want to bring out your notepad and your pencil and write it down. Because it was just perfect, man. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, I heard people say, I'm here by the grace of God, and I really am here by the grace of God, because if I was dealt with justice, I wouldn't be here. I'm here because of my mother's prayers, and I firmly believe that that bullet didn't do his job because of God first and foremost, and because my mother talked to God about keeping me safe. I firmly believe that. And while I was still out there, when I got really desperate, right before I threw in the towel, you know, that surrender that we talk about when we're new here, we don't know what surrender means. We think it's something weak. We think it makes you like a coward or something. But this kind of surrender is actually a good thing. You're surrendering the bad. You're giving up the bad for the good. So it's a really good trait. And you know, we talk about that surrender, and right when I got really desperate, and I knew I couldn't live like that anymore, and I didn't really want to kill myself anymore because I tried it and it really, really hurt and it didn't work. And so I would look at myself in the mirror. This is like 3 days before I got pulled over that last time. November 15th, 2008, which was yesterday, 2008, 8 years ago. That's when my sobriety day is the next day. I remember looking in the mirror, I was at my mom's, and I think I slept for like 3 days straight because I had been up for probably a couple of weeks. I remember looking at myself in the mirror and looking into my eyes and just seeing a sad child. And I saw, like, I didn't like what I saw. And I remember telling God, God, please help me. I can't do this anymore. And I went out with some friends just because old habits die hard. Just I went out and hung out. The stuff quit working for me, man. I couldn't drink enough and I couldn't use enough dope. And I was still miserable. It was no longer helping me. You know, we say helping me. It was never really filling the void. You know, it kind of tricks us into that. Because it doesn't. It just makes you dig a bigger hole. And you know, God answered my prayer because after having that little chat with him in front of the mirror, I was hanging out with some friends. And like I said, the stuff wasn't even working for me. I didn't even care. They were doing it and I was like, whatever, man. And we got pulled over by Food for Less over here in the north side. And out of everyone, everybody went home except for me. The officer told me, look, I have to take you in because there's a failure to appear here. Well, see, what happened is that God was trying to work through this judge named Payton. He was trying to, you know, that judge was a messenger for God, and he was trying to get me help. And this judge would tell me all the time. And this police officer lady named Officer Fahum, she's in homicide now. Those people were working for God, I believe now, because she would have talks with me as I sat in her back seat. She was a narcotics task force officer. She would have talks with me, and then the judge would have talks with me. You need help, you need rehab. I'm going to let you out, you're going to go here, you're going to see these people, you're going to see probation, you're going to test, you're going to do this. It's, you know, it's rehab. You're going to go to a rehab center, you're going to go to meetings, you're going to report back to me. You know, and I was like, yeah, I'll sign whatever. But this time I was like, man, right when that cop pulled me over, I thought, maybe those people, maybe there's something there, you know. And I was so desperate that I thought, man, I'm just going to freaking get tough and I'm going to do it. I'm going to show up every place they tell me to. I'm going to see if I can change my life around. And I did, man. And I can tell you that as I was being put in the back seat of this black and white one last time, out of many times, everything was different, man. I wasn't kicking and fighting and screaming and cussing out the cop. Or asking him why, when I damn well knew why, you know. And I surrendered at that moment. But I think I surrendered in front of the mirror. You see what I'm saying? But at that moment, God responded when I was being put in the back seat of that black and white. I felt like I was being carried. Call it whatever you want. That's my experience. I felt like I was floating. And I surrendered from that moment. I went to jail. See, God knows what he's doing. He saw it fit for me to sit there for 35 days. Every other time they offered me the program, I was out within like a few days. God thought, man, this guy needs a little more. He needs a little more time to detox. So 35 days was just right, man. Because I came out 35 days later, motivated. I went to all the places they told me to report to. Even that place where you got to pee in that cup. I still avoid going by the Tupperware section at Walmart because I get the urge to pee. I really do. It's crazy. But you know what? That it's funny, but it saved my life. They know what they're doing, man. It's like structured. It saves your life, being accountable. I didn't feel like, you know, I didn't feel like using. I definitely had the desire to stop drinking. I came in with the desire to stop drinking and using. I was desperate. I didn't just have a desire. I had a deep desire to stop drinking because I wanted to live. It turns out I wanted to live, you know. And you know what I found out here? I didn't just freaking stop using and drinking. I didn't just stop. I stayed not using and drinking. Because, you know, we can stop. Some of us stop for a while, and then we don't do what's told here. We don't follow suggestions. And, you know, this plan was thought out like a long time ago to save lives. I think it was 1939. You know, maybe before that. That's the date I remember. But they worked on it for a while, and they have saved millions. And I haven't really used the word spiritual much, but I think I said a lot of spiritual things. I think that's the key. That's the common denominator for you to really change your life around, is making that connection with your higher power. And that happens when you surrender to Him and you get into the steps and you take all the garbage that you carry around and you unload it. You make amends. You do everything that's indicated. And then you feel like you were born again. And that is no joke. You feel like it's a rebirth. I'm 8 years old today. And you know what? I have not only built a whole lot of friendships, but I have also rebuilt relationship with my family, all because I was willing to surrender and make a connection with my higher power and live by the principles. I'm in the 10th step every day. Every day. And I have my talk with Him every day. And I know now I can't live without Him. And every breath I take until the day I'm gone from this earth, I want Him to be in my life every day. Amen. And everything else will fall into place. You know, I have wonderful people in my life today. My family, God. Someday you guys will all get to meet my whole family. They're just amazing, loving, just caregivers. I am so blessed, blessed beyond my wildest dreams. Then I have this girl in my life today that, you know, it hit me like lightning with her. You know, lightning hits unexpectedly. That's kind of how it hit me with her. And, you know, I live in today, and today, life is good. Life is amazing today. You don't have to live like that anymore. If you're brand new here and you're hurting, there really is hope. There's nothing out there. There's nothing but jails, institutions, and death. So honestly, it really is a matter of life and death. You know, sobriety. Get sobriety, otherwise you're dealing with either being locked up, losing your mind, or losing your life. Because that happens, you know. Surrender, find someone that will guide you through, show you the way, just find that willingness. If you're here already, that's a miracle already. If you're here, that's already God trying to tell you something. He's opening doors for you. You know. And I really, really hope that I was able to give even a glimmer of hope to anybody here, even if just one person. Because so many of you guys have done it for me, men and women in the program. I remember chairing a noon meeting one time here, and Baba and Marilyn was sitting right there, like two rows behind where she's at now. They like to sit right there at noon, and they're sometimes right next to each other. And Baba is always smiling. He's just a wonderful human being, you know, real jolly guy. And they stood up. He stood up and shook my hand, and Marilyn stood up and gave me a hug. And it's things like that when I was new here. I probably had maybe a year or close to a year that make me want to keep coming back. Things like hearing people say, you can live happy, joyous, and free. You know, I heard that stuff, and that stuff sounded really, really good to me. Those, even just one of those things. You know? So I was like, man, that's... You know, the promises have come true for me tenfold. You know, I don't have a formal education, but I'm working today, man. And I bought a home since I've been in the program. Actually, yeah, I bought a home. I'm going to talk about the home that I live in now. Because I actually got another house before that provided a way for me to get the one that I have now. And that's a blessing. It's material things, but I'm sharing it with you because anything is possible, man, as long as you suit up and you show up and you get into action. Sobriety is not going to land on your lap if you stay wherever you were at, feeling sorry for yourself, just like a job is not going to land on your lap if you're sitting at home watching TV feeling sorry for yourself. Same scenario. You want it, come and get it. It's attainable for anybody, and it's free. And you can also get an extension of life like I have done. I have gotten an extension of life, and I am happy, joyous, and free. Thank you for allowing me to share.